Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
And my guest is Brian Abrams, who's just released his new book, Obama, An Oral History, 2009 to 2017. Brian Abrams is no stranger to this genre, having previously released oral histories of Die Hard and Late Night with David Letterman, among other subjects. This one about Obama, though, draws on interviews with cabinet secretaries, speechwriters, legal advisors, campaign strategists, lawmakers on both sides of the aisle. All of these people had a front row seat to the Obama presidency as it unfolded. Brian, with so many people who serve in presidential administrations, they end up writing their own memoirs once their government service is done. What's the trick to getting them to talk to you and tell their stories in this format?
Persistence, I would say. It begins with persistence. It took about 2 years to collect all of these interviews, and I had to begin, you know, on the outside of it all before finding my way into that inner circle. So, you know, at first, if you reach out to people who served as, say, junior aides in the White House, and you could find them kind of very accessible, friendly people, and, you know, hopefully work your way into Senate aides and work your way to people who worked at federal agencies and gain a little credibility with them. Maybe they, maybe they pass your name along to a cabinet secretary or someone who served as cabinet secretary. But I'd say that the plan or the strategy, to answer your question, is to sort of build enough of a critical mass, right, where you have 50, 60 interviews 6 months into the project, and you can reach out to the mayor's office in Chicago and say to Rahm Emanuel's, you know, assistant that you have 65 interviews on the record and his name's been mentioned 29 times, and ask if he has 10 minutes or 20 minutes. So that's really the idea.
Did you reach out to President Obama?
I was in touch with President Obama's post-presidency office for months, as well as his foundation. And in fact, the Obama White House reached out to me at one point the year before. There was a brief conversation about possibly having him participate. This was more or less a question raised by his office. And I'll be honest with you, this is something that probably would make my editor furious if he knew. So I don't know if he's listening, but I actually didn't want him for the book. Does that sound nuts to you?
No is the short answer, because I sort of understand that strategy. You want everybody else's stories.
There's this famous story from Esquire decades ago written by Gay Talese called Frank Sinatra's Got a Cold. And the original assignment for the reporter was to go to, I believe it was a hotel in L.A., if I remember correctly. And he was to profile Frank and, you know, interview him, spend time with him. And Frank had a cold. And so instead, the reporter spent his time around the hotel, you know, interviewing, the bellhop who, you know, maybe brought the bags into Frank's room or was up there a few times, or the band that traveled with him, or the manager, right? And he created this sort of image of Frank through the universe that surrounded him. And it made Frank this kind of larger, ominous figure, more mysterious figure. That kind of structure of storytelling always appealed to me. The other part of it is, and again, as I said, I imagine my editor, like, stamping his fist on the desk as I say this, but for whatever reason, if I pictured President Obama's interview quotes in this book alongside others, I would think it would be like when someone does a cannonball, you know, in a swimming pool party. It would just add such a weight to it that it would just blow everyone else away. It would be so distracting. This was just my thought. Maybe I overthought it.
No, I see the strategy there. Something I did find very interesting, and I love background stuff at the White House, but Obama staff members show up on day one, January 20th, 2009. They walk into the White House, and I guess they don't think about this. They don't even know where the bathrooms are. What did you learn about how they figured out things just going in and trying to get off on a running start?
Yeah, it seems as if that's always the case. You know, certainly when you think about, you know, there's always a young crop of people that come in. I mean, if you look at, like, studies of the, you know, sort of median age of White House staffs over the years. Like, there is, like, a young staff that generally comes in the first year, and that is because they sort of, like, hitched a ride in, and appropriately so and deservedly so, you know, from their work on the campaign trail. I mean, so if you're young, you generally haven't been, you know, working in the White House all that much. I mean, there were obviously a layer of some senior staffers at the Obama White House that moved in 2009 that had been there before during the Clinton years. But yeah, and I imagine too, you know, the current White House experienced that as well. I don't even know if they know how to pick up a phone, but
well, and, you know,
that seems to be a common pattern.
You mentioned Rahm Emanuel earlier. He was Obama's first chief of staff, and he had the experience of being in the Clinton White House. So he was really the glue that held this all together for the staff when they first arrived, right?
Yeah. Well, there's a series of conversations I've had about that. I mean, a lot of people told me that no matter what, that President Obama always kind of, quote, set the tone, if you will, kind of had the attitudes that kind of trickled down from the top of the mountain or whatever came from him first. But I think that in that first congressional session, which, you know, let's see, 2009 to 2011, during the 111th Congress, Rahm served, I mean, he pretty much served the majority of it, if I remember right. Yeah, up until, say, October 2010. And he did lead the charge, and he did recruit this kind of band of White House aides that had backgrounds, you know, on the Hill, people like Phil Schillerow and Jim Messina. And so, you know, you look at those 2 years, and, you know, Rahm is famous for having this volatile personality, and I'm, you know, I personally am not, you know, thrilled with every policy decision made, and a lot of people on the left aren't, but he clearly was more than capable of ramming through an aggressive legislative agenda in a really short period of time.
When the Obama administration settled in, they had the economy crisis, the financial crisis, climate change, military operations are going on. All these things are just staring them down. What did you learn about how they went ahead to try to prioritize what they're going to accomplish? Because you can't do everything.
Yeah, wow. I mean, when you think about, you know, one always wonders, like, what they would have gotten to had the housing crisis and the financial crisis not happened, right? I mean, that obviously ate up a lot of their game time in that first legislative session. So when they're spending the first 6 months, you know, in addition to, like you mentioned, the wars and, you know, a campaign agenda that, you know, talked about climate change legislation and healthcare reform, you know, you also had to deal with an auto industry that was, you know, dying, and you dealt with an economy that was cratering, and they had to, those were priority one. If those weren't fixed immediately, then you can forget about everything else. But I do think that, you know, if you read through the book, you see, you really kind of see the staff in the bunker. You feel like you're in there with them as they're trying to balance all these plates. And mind you, I mean, you know, he still had the two wars, as you mentioned, and not only that, but there seemed to be this strategy at the outset that, you know, pulling out of the war wasn't enough. There needed to be this focus on Asia and trying to, you know, pivot the eyeballs of America toward that way, as far as, you know, creating new alliances and economic opportunities for the next century. Yeah, you wonder how they did it, right?
Yeah. One of the people you interviewed for the book was our former governor, Tom Vilsack, who went on to be Secretary of Agriculture for basically the entire Obama administration, which is very rare. But how'd you find Vilsack? He seems like he's just a genuinely nice man and a true public servant.
Yeah. No, I really enjoyed talking with him. I thought he was intelligent. I thought he was sincere. You know, we had a much longer conversation than what I ended up including in the book, and it was all really helpful. I mean, I think we talked not only about his time as agriculture secretary, but he really went on this rant about, I call it a rant, that might be mischaracterizing it, but you could tell there was emotion underneath, about the ways in which the 2016 campaign, or just, I don't know if he specifically toward the Clinton campaign of 2016, but just I think the Democratic Party in general just sort of failed to address the middle class. Now that's a, you know, in economic terms. I think that's a conversation that's for a much longer call. I agree with some of his points, some of them I do not. He seems a really passionate man who had a genuine interest in public service.
All right. Well, we just scratched the surface of this. It's Obama and Oral History, 2009 to 2017, by Brian Abrams. It's put together so well and gives you really an insight into history as it unfolded through the memories of 100 or so people who were there. Brian Abrams, fantastic book. Thanks for putting it out, and thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Brian.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.